Hello and welcome to the Mizzou Sports Podcast here at the Columbia Daily Tribune. I'm Nick Kelly here alongside Mr. Daniel Jones, and we are back for another podcast and another week of Mizzou football. How are things going with you?
Oh, maybe better than they are for Missouri at this point. Pretty good. I would just say that it's been a rough week for Missouri. It's kind of, for me, still getting into the things that worked over the course of a season and trying to find storylines and things that are, will be important for this team going forward. So, yeah, I would say that things might be a little less stressful in my life than they are in Barry Odom's at this moment.
Well, more importantly, how are you dealing with this, like, midsummer, late August, or what should be midsummer, but yeah, it's late September heat?
Not pleasant. Yeah, it's, I don't know. The July was pretty hot. August was a little more mild, and then in September we get back into hot again. So I don't know how to categorize it. It's supposed to be hot for the game this weekend, almost 90 degrees. Actually, at kickoff. Kickoff is supposed to be at 6. According to the weather report I saw this week, it's supposed to be around like 88 degrees for kickoff.
It's crazy. And that's at 6 p.m.
Yeah. So tailgaters should be drinking a lot of fluids, yes, preferably non-alcoholic fluids. Not that we're advocating drinking by any means, but
water is very important.
Water is important,
no matter what you're doing.
Right, but I'm thinking about the fans who might have to sit through an entire performance at Faurot Field this week. I don't know. Do what you can to enjoy the game, but make sure you're hydrated. That'll be my message.
Don't be wearing any hydrated Mizzou coats or Mizzou long sleeves.
Not the time. Yeah.
Yeah, I look forward to the day that you can finally break out a sweatshirt and maybe some jeans and not be dripping in sweat if you go anywhere.
Right. Maybe that's one thing that Jim Stark needs to look into after the whole South End Zone project is completed, is a rolling roof to go over, or a retractable roof to go over Faurot Field. I think that's something that they should imagine.
It probably wouldn't be too spendy, right? I mean, just a couple dollars here and
there. He's a pretty good fundraiser. He's already raised almost $50 million.
Have a dome maybe, or just a roof?
Yeah, then you would have people coming in from Kansas City and St. Louis. It wouldn't be deterred by the weather. Could sit inside in comfort. I'm imagining all those games, the Mississippi State game 2 years ago, Deluge, the Nebraska game maybe 7 or 8 years ago, actually maybe almost 10 now with Blaine Gabbert. I remember that was with the rain was so bad. It was like flooding the streets before the game. Then the power went out in the north end zone during the game, and then Mizzou ended up giving up like a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter. So that experience would be much improved with a retractable roof. So Jim Stark, take that suggestion.
If he's watching or listening,
I'm sure Jim Stark is an avid follower,
yes,
of our podcast.
Number one fan, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of Mizzou football,
yeah,
even though we've talked about some past games, we also are going to talk about their most recent game, the Purdue game. Danny, how does the Purdue game change things in the short term and maybe the long term?
For me, it changes a lot in the short term. I've said it after the game on Saturday night that I thought it was a team. I thought Missouri was a team going into the year that could definitely get to 6 wins. And after seeing the stinker that they put out against Purdue, I have changed my tone a little bit. I don't think this is a team that can get to 6 with the rest of the schedule. And if they play like they did against Purdue, they might not win another game all year. So, in fact, I can guarantee if they play like they did against Purdue, they won't win a game all year. So,
they don't have Missouri State in the schedule.
No, unfortunately. That was a discouraging performance, both just on its own and also for the future of this team in the short term. So, I don't know. I think that this game against Auburn is probably the toughest game on the schedule, and now it looks even tougher coming off of, getting blown out by a team that hadn't won a game on the road, hadn't beat a Power 5 team in, 5 years. I don't know. I'm eager to see Missouri response. I said that last week. They didn't respond last week to the firing of Damani Cross and a disappointing home opener in the SEC, so maybe they'll respond this week to getting embarrassed on national TV against Purdue.
And they had a players-only meeting at one point in the week, you guys found out, at Media Days. And what do we think that players-only meeting means? And also, do you think that's a good or bad thing that they had a freshman leading that meeting?
Well, as a third-party observer, it can only be a positive that that sort of behavior is happening. Because, as the player said, and I agree with this statement, I mean, they're the ones who have to make the change. And you could say what you want about the coaching or whatever, but, I mean, really, that team was not ready to play on Saturday, and also was not there was not a lot of passion. There was not a lot of energy from the players out on the field. So regardless of whether or not they executed the game plan or whatever, I mean, that was just a team that didn't look like they wanted to be there against Purdue. So that has to change immediately. And I think having a player meeting, I mean, may not solve the problem, but at least it's a step in for the players to acknowledge that there's a problem and take it upon themselves to fix it. So I don't see any negatives out of, you know.
It certainly doesn't hurt.
Right.
But at the same time, as you're alluding to, these coaches can only do so much, and whether or not they're doing what they need to be doing is to be determined. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, these players are the ones on the field. They're the ones doing this, so
yeah.
They have to take ownership for what they're doing. And this is obviously a good step in that direction for them to be doing that.
I agree. And to your point about the freshmen, I also think that can only be a good thing. And people might disagree with me about that, you know, it should be a senior's job to step up. And, yeah, probably it is a senior's job to step up in that sort of situation. But I think the fact that there's at least one freshman, Aubrey Miller, out there that's willing to step up and say, hey, this is what I'm expecting out of the leaders, that's good. That's good for Missouri that there's a guy on that roster who already as a freshman is willing to say those kinds of things. I think that maybe
bodes well for the future.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's a way to inspire seniors in a way that maybe they haven't been inspired yet, is that there's people below them on the depth chart and in age that are, you know, calling them out. So sad story about Aubrey Miller. This just today, actually. This morning he tweeted he broke his fibula in practice. Yesterday, Missouri's coaching staff confirmed he'll be out 4 to 6 weeks. He was the guy that stepped up. He was the freshman that we're talking about that stepped up and made such a noise in this meeting. And then 2 days later, unfortunately, breaks his leg in practice. So he was really a special teams guy for the most part for Missouri. I don't know if he's gotten any snaps at linebacker yet, but I think still that's kind of discouraging when your guy who's really leading the charge in that meeting then gets hurt 2 days later. It's unfortunate.
But at the same time, Michael Shear, who was a big-time leader for the team last year, he got hurt, tore his ACL and MCL, mm-hmm. but he was still there leading the team, and he's actually still there now, and he's taking part in this football team.
Yeah.
So at least for him, he can still play a leadership role, and he obviously gets the aspect of there's so much more to his job as a leader than just being on the field, and he can have that impact. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think obviously you feel bad for him with the leg injury, but at least for his sake, he can still lead as long as he's obviously able to be there.
Agreed.
So a lot of things went wrong in the Purdue game,
mm-hmm.
but they're playing Auburn, which fresh opportunity, but don't know if that's going to turn out well for them.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think could get better against Auburn?
Well, you kind of look at the things Mizzou does well and the things Auburn does well. And granted, into this season, there hasn't been really any part of the game where Missouri's played well in all three games. But based on their personnel, I mean, you would expect Missouri in a normal week to have a better run game, better, you know, running attack than they did against Purdue. It was really bad against Purdue. Damari Crockett, I believe, had 19 yards on 10 carries. It was his lowest output since his first game freshman year against West Virginia when he carried the ball twice and got 4 yards. So you would expect him to be better in a normal week. But now you're going up against Auburn, whose run defense is spectacular. They are allowing 2.3 yards per carry this season, and that includes a game against Clemson in week 2. So I would say normally the running game would be better, but I don't know if it'll be better against Auburn because their unit is so stout.
Well, speaking of that Clemson game, just if I could jump in.
Sure.
I believe in that game, Auburn and their defense only gave up 2 touchdown drives the entire game to mm-hmm. that Clemson team.
Yeah, that's great.
And that's a good Clemson team. That's no shabby Clemson team.
No, and actually, I was kind of rewatching that game this week, and Auburn pretty much controlled the game for the first 2 quarters. And they did give up a touchdown drive in the second quarter to go down 7-6. And then I'm pretty sure right at the beginning of the third quarter to make it 14-6. So, Auburn really controlled a lot of the first half of that game. And then Clemson's skill kind of took over from there. Now, in terms of things that could get better, like the running game, I said, in a normal week, I'd expect it to be better, but that's a real strength for Auburn. I would expect normally Missouri's run defense to be a little bit better, maybe just because Auburn is not a very good running team, or they haven't been this season. Traditionally, under Gus Malzahn, they have been, but this year they're only averaging 3.9 yards per carry. They really struggled last week against Mercer. Missouri's run game hasn't been good, though, this year. So I don't know if that's going to be a strength. I guess if I have to pick something, I would tentatively say maybe Missouri's passing game could be a little bit better because it was really pretty bad against Purdue, along with everything else.
You can really only go up when you're so low as far as production.
Yeah, and one thing about that Purdue game, Drew Locke made some bad decisions. He made some bad throws. He made quite a few overthrows, and the interception, his first interception to the left sideline, was really bad. It was a throw into double coverage to a guy that was never open. So that was
across the body too, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was a bad decision all the way around. But I think one thing that could help him is they didn't target a single tight end last week, and we'll talk about this in a little bit. But if you give him some more opportunities to throw over the middle, rather than throwing to the sideline on every single play, that makes things a lot easier on a quarterback because those throws to the sideline take so long to get there. It requires a lot more from the receiver to get open over there.
And to throw a tight ball, too.
Exactly. So I think that could be, I don't know, tentatively, I guess I'm not 100%, I'm not real confident. Drew Locke hasn't been good against SEC opponents in his career, but I don't know. I think the run game's really going to struggle against Auburn, and I think Auburn's run game could improve against Missouri. So that's kind of the direction that I'm going.
And Drew Locke, you constantly see things on Twitter. You have scouts that will say things. People like NFL.com were really high on Drew Locke as a future NFL prospect. But we still haven't seen him consistently come out and produce against formidable opponents. And maybe this is the week he turns the corner. We'll see. He's struggled,
mm-hmm.
but he has the talent, so it'll be – and I know we talked about this after the game too, but whether or not he can actually produce against a really talented opponent, we haven't seen that yet, but maybe this could be that game.
Yeah, I think we're kind of running out of time to keep saying that. For that storyline only has
right.
so much life.
He's a junior.
Yeah, and that was a storyline that started middle of last season was, okay, when are we going to really see the Drew Locke that everybody keeps talking about? And it happened, you know, sparingly. Of course, it happened against non-conference opponents. The Arkansas game last year, he was pretty good. But, you know, so far this year, beating Missouri State, I don't think puts you very high on anybody's list. I mean, I think that was obviously 7 touchdowns is a lot, but following it up with a pretty bad game against South Carolina and then a bad game against Purdue, I mean, you lose all the goodwill that you earned in that first week. So, yeah, I don't know. So
who is the key player in offense in this game for you?
Well, we talked about the tight ends, and I think it might be Jason Reese. Missouri has 3 tight ends, and Jason Reese, Kendall Blanton, and Alberto, okay, with
Okwigboonam, something like that?
Alberto.
Alberto.
I'll stick with Alberto.
Good old Alberto.
If I saw it on paper, I might be able to give it a better shot. But three tight ends that have a potential to make an impact every week. And as I said before, Drew Locke didn't throw to a tight end a single time against Purdue. In fact, a lot of his throws were to outside receivers right at the line of scrimmage. And it was unsuccessful. It was successful against Missouri State when you have personnel that is vastly more talented. They didn't really do that very much against South Carolina, but that must have been huge in the game plan going into Purdue, because 19 of Drew Locke's, I believe, 28 throws were to outside receivers. And three were four to inside receivers, and then the rest were throwaways, or that one that he just dropped, which was ruled an incomplete pass. So that was a part of the game that I didn't think was utilized very well last week, was Missouri getting involved with the tight ends. One thing that'll be good if Missouri can use their tight ends in this game, one of Auburn's best players on defense is Trey Williams, who's their weak side linebacker. So your strong side linebacker usually lines up in line with the tight end. Sure. So if you're going to the tight end, you're taking the play away from Trey Williams, who's on the weak side, kind of playing in coverage or going after the quarterback. I think that could be a strength for Missouri. Of course, Auburn's got talent all over the defense, but at least in that situation, you're going away from their impact player.
Their top guy, yeah. And I believe he was second team preseason All-SEC as well, right?
Yeah.
So talented guy there. And so defensively, though, Missouri, big area of struggle for the Tigers.
Yeah.
Who do we think might be their impact player there?
I guess my eyes are going to be on Cale Garrett, who played in the first two series and then was pulled. Eric Beisel went in that third series against Purdue. So Cale Garrett didn't really come out with a very strong, you know, early first quarter. Obviously, nobody on the defense played very well in that first half. But I think he's going to be important, because that Auburn running attack, which, as we said, hasn't been very good. They got 3.4 yards per carry against Mercer. That's not very good at all. That's not very good against a good team. That's not very good at all against an FCS team.
Right.
Going into this game, that's going to be something that Auburn wants to do more, is run the ball. And a lot of that, they have a huge offensive line. I'm guessing a lot of that's probably going to try to be between the tackles and run right at Missouri and right down their throat. So that's, I think Cale Garrett's going to be big in trying to, and keeping that running attack at bay. And you know, I don't know how successful he'll be, but I think he is the key to Missouri having a good day, is him in the middle guiding the defense and then also kind of doing his best to stop the run.
So have they figured out how they want to use the linebackers yet? Is it something where they've cemented three guys, or are they rotating guys still, or what's their plan?
They're still rotating, and they rotated a lot in that first quarter last week, because they weren't getting really good production out of anybody. The guys who've been starting have been Terez Hall at weak side linebacker, Cale Garrett at middle linebacker, and Caleb Pruitt, the transfer from K-State, at strong side linebacker.
Kind of the hybrid, right?
Right, and I wrote about him at going into week one. He was originally a safety that they put at linebacker so that he could be an asset in coverage on slot receivers.
Okay.
They don't have to sub in a nickelback to cover those guys. So yeah, those are the three guys, but Eric Beisel subbed in a little bit against Purdue. It's been Cale Garrett from the start, his position. But Eric Beisel's come in at middle linebacker. Joey Burkett has come in at weak side linebacker, and Brandon Lee has come in at strong side linebacker. So those, it's really kind of been a rotation with those guys. Cale Garrett's really, of all the linebackers, the guy getting the most playing time, but Terez Hall has also been getting quite a few looks at the weak side too.
One big area for me is going to be watching this defensive line against this Auburn offensive line. Mm-hmm. Linebackers will obviously play a big role in stopping the running game, but I think this could be the one area where Missouri could have a slight advantage.
Yeah.
This defensive line hasn't been maybe the D-line zoo that they like to call themselves and just lights out, but this Auburn offensive line has struggled so far. They have broken in two new guys into this starting rotation so far this year. They also had a guy get hurt last game, I believe, against Mercer. So they have some shuffling going around there, some inexperienced guys, and they've struggled. In the first two games of the season, they give up 14 sacks. And granted, they faced good opponents like Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's one area that Missouri could really capitalize, it could be this defensive line against this O-line. And that's something that they've mentioned in practice, Auburn has, about this Missouri defensive line could give them problems. And, of course, a lot of teams will make the other team sound like they're going to go win a national championship
right
beforehand, but I think it's legitimate to say that that could be something that could be a problem for Auburn.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I've been waiting for that defensive line to play better all year with the talent that they have, with, especially with Terry Beckner. And they weren't really getting any push last week. They did get a couple sacks, but yeah, I think that's a lot. That's a place where Missouri has a lot of room to improve, is on the defensive line.
It's something we've kind of forgotten about. I mean, last year at this time, there was all this talk about, or I think it was after game one or game two, all this talk about what happened to getting sacks, what, you know, where did this D line go? And of course, they had a different defense at that point that Damani Cross was trying to implement. But yeah, it's, I feel like it hasn't really been talked about much, that this defensive line, they've gotten some sacks, but we just haven't talked about them.
There's
much.
Just been so many other problems. Right. There's been so many other things
so
to
maybe
talk
the defensive
about.
Line's not that bad off. They right. just haven't been amazing so that people can talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. Last year, I mean, the defense was terrible. It's been bad this season, but that was really, like, you know, when you watch those first couple games last year, it's like, man, this defense is not very good. And this year, it's like, of course, you had the defense was really bad in week one, and then the offense didn't look very good in week two, and there's just been a litany of things. It hasn't been, wow, I don't think the defensive line has been as glaring this year because everything else has been so bad. The, you know, the special teams has been a train wreck from start to finish, kickoffs and punt returns. The offense has been shaky. Drew Locke hasn't looked very good in week two and week three. The run game fell apart last week. Secondary's been all over the place. Can't make tackles. Losing guys in the backfield. Last year, the defensive line, you could really pinpoint and say, huh, that doesn't look like it did last year.
Sure.
Now this year, three games in, it's like, where do you even start?
So many different things, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, for sure. Well, special teams, to go back to that. We've talked about this several times on this podcast. We've talked about it several times away from the podcast, too. Is it time that, I know that Barry is having other coaches that are maybe graduate assistants and people handling this, but is it time that they maybe try to have something more formal for these special teams?
So I had a couple interesting conversations this week because I'm working on a story for Corey Fittoni for Saturday's paper.
Okay.
So I got a chance actually to talk to former kicker Andrew Baggett, and I asked him some of those questions. Who are the guys that coach special teams when you were there? What's the situation like? They do have a guy who is a special teams analyst who pretty much works with cutting up all the film, and, you know, he's kind of like the guy behind the scenes. And he actually is the one that serves as, or at least when Andrew Baggett was there 2 years ago, as the coach for the special teams. But they don't have a coach who really does it. And then also I talked to Chris Cluey, who is a pro punter with the Vikings and also played at UCLA. And even him, like he was saying, even in the NFL you don't have specialist guys who like – know how to punt. You know, you have special teams coordinators, but you don't have specialists. So it's, which I found really interesting, in the NFL you don't have coaches that know right. how to punt, like that coach of special teams.
Yeah, they have money to hire them, so
sure, you would right. you would expect them to, but you know, he was saying no, it's pretty much the only guys who know how to do it are the guys who've done it, and which I found really shocking. So now, to get to the point about Missouri, do they need to hire a guy? I don't see why not. It would be rare. I don't think there's – I can't think of any teams in the SEC or in, you know, a Power 5 conference that have a person devoted to special teams. But, you know, I mean, I guess what do you have to lose at this point? You have an open position. I mean, you would – ideally like to hire a defensive coordinator, but if Barry Odom's going to do that job, you know, maybe
seems
you could,
like he's decided that, yeah,
right. I mean, you could put Ryan Walters into that spot if you think he could do it, or you know, I say him because I feel like he's probably the guy. He's a co-defensive coordinator before. He's probably the guy that Barry Odom would trust most. Why not hire a special teams coordinator? It's been such a glaring mismatch for Missouri for the last 2 years. The place kicking, the return game, the coverage game, everything. It's been really bad. Why not hire somebody in there and make that a strength? Say every game, it doesn't matter, you know, our offense might struggle, but we're going to get good contributions from our kicking game that's going to make our offense better, or our defense might struggle, but we're going to get good contributions from our punting game to supplement.
Right, and get good field position.
Right.
And we talked about that, I think, two podcasts ago, how many teams in professional and college football don't value special teams like they should, and how on NFL.com, the Patriots, someone mentioned that what the Patriots do so well is special teams.
Yeah.
And look how successful the Patriots
Chris
are.
Chris Cluey said that too.
Yeah. Right. And so that's why, to me, it is almost surprising that, okay, maybe the rest of the SEC doesn't really put a premium on it, but at this point, Missouri can't keep up offensively, defensively. Maybe use special teams as an edge. It really could work. And I really am interested to read your story, because that's going to be very insightful, and look forward to that one.
Yeah, it'll be kind of about Corey Fittoni and his role as a cult hero on this team, more so than anything. But that was an interesting conversation that I had with those, with both Andrew Baggett and Chris Cluey. And if you're Missouri, I mean, you have guys at pretty much every position, you know, coaches for pretty much every position on the field. You have a quarterback's coach, and Josh Heupel, who's also the offensive coordinator. You have your wide receivers coach. You have your defensive line linebackers. You have an inside linebackers coach and an outside linebackers coach. And yet, the job of special teams goes to an analyst. That's an entire phase of the game. I'm not a Division I football coach. I don't know, you know, I guess it's up to them how they want to prioritize it. I'm sure they know a lot more about the game than me, but I just find it interesting that an entire phase of the game is delegated to an analyst, somebody who's not even really listed as an official coach on the roster, whereas you have, you know, guys coaching the inside linebackers, outside linebackers, cornerbacks, defensive line, offensive line, things of that nature. Entire phase of the game totally left out.
And again, I really think it's just something where people see special teams as a way for you to get the ball, basically.
Like, yeah.
Okay, just punt it, you know.
Exactly.
Get the ball kind of thing.
I 100% agree with
and
that.
I talked to Kentrell Brothers this summer at Vikings camp, a former Mizzou linebacker, because he was a big special teams player for the Vikings in his first year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him about that whole experience, and he really said he had to learn how to be a good special teams player. And granted, he was busy, getting 10-plus tackles a Saturday when he was playing for the Tigers, so mm-hmm. didn't really do a ton of special teams. But
right.
There is an aspect to learn. I mean, you do have to learn. It's not just, even though it seems like it might just be run down the field and knock out anyone in, you know, the opposing uniform, knock them out of your way kind of thing, but, like, you still have to learn how to go about your duties in special teams, and it's a lot more than just the kicking and punting. It's just, you have to learn that position.
Yeah, and you'll see, you have seen what happens when that's the mentality, which is Deebo Samuel runs back 97-yard kickoffs, and you have coverage guys on punts that are running into the guy who's trying to catch the punt, and you have guys who accidentally knock the ball into the end zone. And
sure.
Yeah, it's been a debacle for Missouri so far this year. So I don't know. Maybe that is it's an option. I don't know if Barry Odom will go that way, but it'd be interesting.
You have to try changing something.
Maybe
it is special teams. Maybe not.
I think it's interesting that's the way that coaches tend to build their programs. Barry Odom isn't unique by not having a special teams coordinator. I think that's pretty standard across college football. So I think it's interesting that they build their programs like that.
Yeah, so we'll get to see special teams again on Saturday as Auburn takes on Missouri. So in this game, what are you expecting to happen? What's your prediction?
I think Auburn's defense is going to dominate. They're a very, very good group. Missouri's offense has struggled. They've scored one touchdown in their last two games. Failed to run the ball with any authority against Purdue. Drew Locke's been totally out of sync. He had a lot of drops in the South Carolina game. Emmanuel Hall might be limited going into this game after getting just destroyed on a crossing route against Purdue. So I think that's tough for Missouri's offense. This Auburn offense is an enigma because you have a lot of talent, and you have Gus Malzahn, who's proven he can be a pretty effective coach when it comes to scheming up things on the offensive side. They turned the ball over five times against Mercer. Couldn't run the ball very well against an FCS team. Jared Stidham was really impressive. He ended up throwing for over 330 yards and I think completed like 33 of 37 passes in that game. So he was pretty effective, but no touchdowns, and he did throw an interception. So I don't think, like, you know, the last couple of weeks, the prediction's been, oh, high scoring game with Missouri. I don't really see that happening this week. I don't think Missouri's offense is going to go very far against Auburn. And I don't think Auburn's offense is going to really light it up. I think they'll be dominant. I think they'll won't have any problems moving the ball. But I don't know. The prediction I wrote down is 28-10 Auburn. That's kind of what
fair,
I see it, and maybe the game being a little bit less, you know, the score being a little bit closer than what the game actually looks like too. So,
for me, Auburn is coming off of they didn't lose, but it was similar to Missouri and giving up 43 points to Missouri State. Mm-hmm. So for Auburn to, I think they only won by 14 against Mercer.
24-10.
Yeah. So for them to do that, you have to imagine that refocuses them, and this is their SEC opener. As I talked to the beat writer for Auburn this week, and he mentioned that they keep saying their goals are still intact. So they see this as a chance. Okay, we've been a little rusty, but SEC opener, chance to refocus. This could be a good warm-up game for them to finally get things rolling.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. And
a little tune-up, you know, fix things that are broken. Yeah.
I'm sure they're happier to face Missouri in the SEC opener than Alabama.
So. Right, yeah, no doubt.
So I think that, unfortunately, Missouri gets to be on the receiving end of a team that is like, all right, this has been enough. You know, we haven't gone 0-3, but it's been frustrating, and so this could get a little ugly for Missouri as – Auburn's going to be frustrated and wanting to come in and prove that what they did against Mercer is just more of a fluke.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe Missouri could surprise and say, hey, no one expected anything from us, and so we have nothing to lose. And they could. Yeah, that's a dangerous team when your back's basically against the wall and you have nowhere to go but forwards.
Yeah. So. And somebody commented on our Facebook Live after the game, you know, convinced me that we won't go 1-10 or 1-11. And it's like, well, nobody expected Missouri basketball to win a conference game last year. There's no guarantee that it'll happen, but sometimes sports just go off script sometimes.
There's a reason you play the game. If games were predetermined, one, sports would be a lot less fun, and two, it just wouldn't be sports.
Right.
And so there's a reason you play the game. But make sure to check out the Columbia Tribune. As we talked about Danny's story about Corey Fittoni, that'll be in the Tiger Extra on Saturday, so check out Saturday's paper for that. And also make sure to join us on Facebook Live after the game back here on the Tribune's Facebook page to give us your thoughts on the Missouri game. Maybe it's a Missouri win, maybe it's a Missouri loss. We shall see. Make sure to give us your thoughts on that, and we look forward to hearing from you then and talking to you then. You can follow him on Twitter at Daniel_M_Jones. You can follow me on Twitter at _Nick Kelly. For Daniel Jones, I'm Nick Kelly. Until next time.